You're listening to His Radio Talk, and this is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To join us, dial 864-977-TALK. That's 864-977-8255. And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for listening to the program today. This is hour number two of Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. We're glad to have you along. This is Tony Beam. I'm the Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we are equipping transformational leaders for the church and society. All right, CNN had better things to do last night than to cover a couple of major news stories of the day. You know, if you get your news from CNN, let me just tell you, you're getting only the part of the news that is detrimental to the president and is detrimental to the country as a whole. CNN is a sold-out news network to the left. I mean, they're essentially the propaganda arm of the DNC and a propaganda arm of the Marxist movement in America. I mean, there's just not that, that's not even debatable anymore. CNN doesn't pay attention to stories that don't undermine the president. In fact, if it helps the president, they stay away from it. Now, I'm just going to give you the evidence for this. The latest jobs report, we talked about it yesterday, showed 4.8 million jobs were added to the U.S. economy in June. We saw not only that, but we saw consumer confidence skyrocket, and the unemployment rate fell all the way down to 11.1%. Now, that's still incredibly high. It's way too high, but it's about half of what it was during the height of the coronavirus shutdown. And, of course, before all of that, we had historic low unemployment rates that were really going a long way toward pushing President Trump toward a second term. But CNN didn't even mention the jobs report. I mean, their entire primetime news program last night avoided it because it's good news for the country. And good news for the country is bad news for progressives. They don't want to pass that along. They don't want to. In fact, CNN, just like the New York Times, CNN would have been pounded by their supporters, by the left, if they actually talked about this story. Because progressives get it. They know that if you can control the information that people get, you can control the people. And that's a big part of their goal. So what about what else? What's the second big story? Well, I would say the second big story is that CNN didn't cover anything about Ghislaine Maxwell being arrested. And we're going to talk about that probably in the next segment. Ghislaine Maxwell was the girlfriend of Epstein and of Jeffrey Epstein. And, of course, Jeffrey Epstein is he. You know the backstory about this. He was supposedly providing underage girls to some pretty heavy hitters across the spectrum, but particularly heavy hitters who are known progressives. I mean, Bill Clinton was on his airplane so much that he had frequent flyer miles with Epstein. So the fact that Epstein is dead, even though he was on suicide watch. And by the way, if anybody wants to take odds, Ghislaine Maxwell is also on suicide watch. We'll see how long she survives. And I'm hoping that she survives and is able to tell her story. But, you know, the circumstances surrounding Jeffrey Epstein were very questionable about him dying, hanging himself in his cell. So now, with Jeffrey Epstein gone, then all these people could kind of relax who felt like that their heads can be on the chopping block, metaphorically, because of the knowledge that Jeffrey Epstein had about their behavior. Well, now they're back on the chopping block because Ghislaine Maxwell was the one who shuffled all these girls. I mean, for 3 years at least, she would find young girls, groom them, and get them ready to become the victims of some of these powerful men that would fly around the country with Jeffrey Epstein. And so now that she's been arrested, she has every reason that you can think of to sing like a songbird. Because why not? I mean, Epstein's dead. That was her boyfriend. There's nothing that she can say that's going to hurt him. And the information that she gives is likely going to be in exchange for a lenient sentence for her and her role, because apparently she was the recruiter. She was the one that went out, found the girls, groomed them, and funneled them into this illicit network of powerful men who wanted to have sex with young girls. And so she knows who was involved in this. She can put her finger on a lot of powerful people who have been associated with Epstein, but nothing could ever be proven. So, and nothing's been proven yet. I want to be clear. We don't have any idea. But the very fact that CNN would not even talk about that story, can you imagine if Epstein had been connected to conservatives? If Epstein had been connected to Trump administration officials in any kind of real way, then CNN, that's the only story CNN would have had last night. But instead of reporting the news, CNN manufactures stories that benefit and promote progressive causes. That's what they've become. To ignore the jobs report when it was so much better than anybody predicted, well, of course they're not going to talk about that. It benefits the president. To ignore the arrest of Ghislaine Maxwell, the confidant, the what some people call the madam of Jeffrey Epstein, no, they're not going to mention that, because ultimately it could be people that they like that are brought down by this. Bill Clinton in particular. I mean, Clinton had, what was it, 30-something times he was on the plane with Epstein. Maybe it was less than that, but it was a bunch. It was tens of times that he was on there. And, you know, he really hasn't given a great explanation of that. So what does CNN do? They just ignore it. So they ignore news that they don't want to get out. That's why when you run into these, you know, progressives, and they start rattling off all this stuff, and you begin to try to tell them, well, here are the facts, they're not going to accept it, because they get their news from the New York Times and CNN. And CNN and the New York Times only publish stories, and they publish them in such a way that makes the president and conservatives and Republicans in general look terrible, and it fires up the left-wing progressive base, and it leads them to get the idea that they can take over the country through these riots. I mean, there's a thread running through all of this that should make everybody uncomfortable. Thanks for listening to the program. Let's do celebrity birthdays. If you're having a birthday today, we say this to you.
Happy birthday!
Yep, happy birthday on your birthday. You're a celebrity and you share a celebrity birthday with Pete Fountain, who's a great jazz clarinet player, who was born today in 1930. Michael Cole, who was one of the Mod Squad, was born today in 1945. He's 80 years old. Jan Smithers from WKRP in Cincinnati, 71 years old today. Laura Branigan was born in 1952. Montel Williams is 64. Tom Cruise, 58 years old today. And Moses Alou is 54 years old. So that's our celebrity birthdays for today. Not a whole lot of people, but some really good people on the list. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Ghislaine Maxwell and her arrest, because it is kind of weird. People are speculating or wondering why she was taken into custody in Bradford, New Hampshire. Now, she apparently paid cash, or somebody paid cash for her, for $1 million estate in Bradford, which was on about 145 acres of land, and that's where she's been hiding out. There were reports that she was staying at the Israeli embassy in Israel, or in the Israeli embassy here. It would be here, being the American embassy in Israel. That she was hiding out in France, But a lot of people said, no, she wouldn't go to France because she's a French citizen. She's got a French passport, and the extradition contract that, or agreement that we have with France would have her, if they picked her up, French authorities, they would deport her. And so she decided to hide out kind of in plain sight. That is, right under the nose. She was only a few hundred miles away from the federal prosecutor office that would bring charges against her. But she's been charged with a whole host of things. And again, the real value here is getting into the shadowy world of Jeffrey Epstein. We, you know, with Epstein's death, a lot of people thought, well, we're never going to know the true story. We're never going to get to the bottom of what he was really involved in and how many well-known people were taking advantage of these flights and these setups with these young girls. Well, this woman, Ghislaine Maxwell, knows, because she was essentially the pimp. She was the one that went out and recruited, groomed the girls, got them funneled into Epstein's pipeline. And this is, I mean, the chance of a lot of people coming down over this is pretty good, because she's going to have knowledge. And she's not going to want to go to jail to the point that she won't see the light of day again. She's 58 years old, and if she were to get any kind of a significant prison sentence, it would be a life sentence. And so she's going to exchange, for a lesser sentence or a lesser charge, she will exchange information. The question is, can they keep her alive long enough to be able to do that? Now, and I'm not being facetious here. I mean, what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, you know that a lot of people would have been brought down by his testimony, his finger pointing, his ability to point out people that were involved in some of the shady things he was involved in. And Ghislaine Maxwell is going to be the same way. So she's going to exchange information. They know this, and that's why I think this suicide watch, I mean, it better be pretty robust. And they, you know, I think the advantage here for her is what happened with Jeffrey Epstein, because there, can you imagine the outrage, the uproar, if the same thing was to happen to her? I mean, you would never be able to quell the conspiracy theories, and probably shouldn't. So we'll just have to, in the coming days, we're going to hear more about this, obviously, as she begins to talk. And it's going to be interesting to see who actually gets brought down over this. All right. Let's see here. Yesterday, this is incredible. You know, I told you, I guess it was last week, Congress tried to pass a resolution that would, you know, support the police, that would condemn rioters, all of these things, and it was rejected. I mean, Democrats would not vote for it. So yesterday, Thursday afternoon, Democrats killed another resolution aimed at curbing mob violence. Senator Mike Lee of Utah introduced the bill after a man in Utah was mobbed, then shot by a group of rioters. The non-binding resolution offered a statement of support for peaceful protesters and law enforcement who do their job well, while condemning violence and the desecration of monuments across the country. So This is not binding. This is not something that is telling people something they can do or not do. This is the Senate expressing their overall thought process about what's happening in America. So, a non-binding resolution is the tiniest first step of a response, Lee read as he introduced it. We need to do much, much better, but in this divided political moment, showing that Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats are able to speak with one voice against woke mob violence and in defense of equal justice and civic peace would be a welcome step. The resolution itself states that the country was founded on universal principles of freedom. See, this is why the Democrats won't sign it. They're into the 1619 Project, that America is a terrible country. This goes back to our earlier conversation. And that it was founded on slavery, which is a lie. It's revisionist history at its worst to support a narrative that is also a lie. And that's that America is racist to its core. The resolution carries states the country is founded on universal principles of freedom, justice, and human equality. It also acknowledged that throughout our nation's history, Americans have struggled to realize those ideals, but nonetheless made greater progress toward them than any nation on earth. That is indisputably true, demonstrably true. Those are facts that can't be, you have to lie in order to dispute those facts. The intended bipartisan resolution swiftly ran into problems. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat in New Jersey, spoke directly after Lee to kill the bill. The resolution reeks of supremism, reeks of supremacist views, and it seeks to mischaracterize overwhelmingly peaceful protest across the nation. Menendez, it does not. It supported protesters. It actually made a statement of support for protesters while condemning rioters and violence. See, the dirty little secret here is that a lot of Democrats, they don't care about the rioting and the violence because they think that's going to get them closer to an election victory in November. And I think they'd burn down the White House if they thought they could get by with it. If they thought that would give them a victory, if they had some kind of advantage by doing that or blowing up the Capitol, I think there are people in the Democrat Party that would go that far. Menendez offered to support the resolution on one condition, if it condemned President Trump. He stated that if a sentence was added condemning politicians who incite violence, especially President Trump, the resolution would be acceptable. None of these people were incited directly by President Trump. See, this again proves the disingenuousness of the progressives that have taken over the Democrat Party. They want to hang this on President Trump as an election year issue. We've got serious problems in this country. We've got people's lives being destroyed, businesses being burned to the ground. You've got anarchists running around willy-nilly with no police protection, and you've got people cutting police protection. And then in the middle of all that, they want to blame President Trump? This is politics and hackery at its worst. He stated that if a sentence was added condemning politicians and so forth, he then attacked the president for retweeting a video of two homeowners pointing firearms at a mob that stormed the gates to their private neighborhood. Well, you know, I mean, that's what happened. There was a mob that stormed the neighborhood. And Mike McCluskey and his wife were trying to defend their property. Lee attempted to compromise, saying he was willing to include the section about any politicians without the specific attack on the president. Menendez refused to budge, of course. The resolution died, and the floor took an explosive turn. Of course they're not going to agree to that, because that would really tick off the base. The base thinks they've got the country by the throat, and they're not going to allow these left-wing progressive politicians to yank the control of the country out from under these progressives who think they're in charge now. I don't know whether to be outraged or just embarrassed for the Senate, Lee said. Staring down the Democratic senator who had killed the resolution, Lee said, they can't say mob violence is bad without bringing up the president. People are being shot. Businesses looted. Lives are being ruined. Communities are burning. Whose side are you on? After Menendez complained that accusing them of covering for the mob was unbecoming of the legislative body, Lee shot back. It is unbecoming to accuse another senator of supremacy, which is exactly the truth. Lee, full of anger, then gave a several-minute-long condemnation of the institutions enabling the violence. The indignant exchange ended with the Utah senator going off on the country's addled education system and its government backing. The mob hates America on America's dime. It's time to cut their allowance. I couldn't agree more. All right, before we get into another piece today that I wanted to talk about America, there's a great piece today by Thomas Kranewitter, who is a former professor and co-founder of the Vino and Veritas Society that's devoted to forming a Declaration of Independence culture in America. So in other words, getting people to look at the benefits of the Declaration of Independence. So we're going to talk about the fact that America was a country that was founded that has done more to get rid of slavery than any other country in the world. I want to get through that. But before, I want us to turn our attention for a second to this story about the assertions that are out there that there was a Russian plot to kill American soldiers by paying a bounty to Afghanistan terrorists. Congressional Democrats went to a classified briefing yesterday at the White House, and House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said the closed-door briefing only made them more alarmed about the allegations that a Russian military intelligence unit offered cash bounties for Taliban fighters to assassinate U.S. service members in Afghanistan. Now, the next paragraph here illustrates why I think Trump gets himself in trouble. A lot of people are willing to defend him no matter what he says, but he called this a hoax. He called the story a hoax. Well, it may not be verifiable. In other words, it may not be a story that can be independently verified by intelligence agencies because they disagree about the veracity of it and the strength of the intelligence that they have. But it's not a hoax. It is a thing. In other words, it is something that has been investigated and that intelligence officials are still trying to sort out to see how much truth and how much fiction is involved here. And the president, to me, doesn't do himself any favors by calling it a hoax. Hoyer goes on to say there may be a different judgments as to the level of credibility, but there was no assertion that the information we had was a hoax. Yeah, just all the president had to do is come out and say, you know, there's intelligence gathered from all over the world, from our agencies and the countries that we share intelligence information with. And I've requested that the intelligence that's verified be what makes it to me. I don't want all of these speculative reports out there because, quite frankly, that's what got George W. Bush in trouble with WMDs. He accepted a high degree of speculation that he was assured was a slam dunk, and it turned out that the intelligence community was divided over WMD information coming out of Iraq. And so the president said, look, I don't want to see this. I don't want to know about it unless you're pretty certain, because if you come and tell me something, then I'm going to want to take action. That would have been a lot better. Just the president to say, that's the way I operate. Here's the thing. The president says he wasn't briefed. The intelligence officials say the president wasn't briefed. Now, what they mean by that is that he wasn't directly told in a meeting that this information existed. But the president gets daily intelligence briefings that often includes intelligence that hasn't been verified. But the president doesn't read those. I mean, does the president read? Of course. I mean, his Democrat progressive detractors would try to have you believe that the president never looks at intelligence reports. Well, what he's done is ask that these reports be boiled down to a simple form with just the facts so that he can read a lot of information. But even then, he doesn't like to spend a whole lot of time reading the reports. It's not the way he leads. Now, we could go back and debate the merits of that. We could go back and research and see what other presidents have done, how much they've been willing to read these intelligence reports. But to me, that's a waste of time. The president of the United States is the commander in chief, and he gets these intelligence reports, and he can lead by reading every word, or he can read by reading a synopsis of them. I mean, I don't consider that to be some kind of major faux pas if the president doesn't read every word that's put in front of him. But it's possible, because in most of these reports, intelligence includes unverifiable information. In other words, Mr. President, we're working on this. We're not sure about it yet, but you need to be aware that this is something that could become verified down the road. Now, it's likely that the president got something like that. In fact, yesterday at a press conference, after these Democrats had a briefing with Trump administration officials. McEnany, who's the current spokesperson for the president, said, refused to say whether the Russian intel at some point appeared in Trump's daily written report. She pushed back against the suggestion that Trump doesn't like to hit the books. She said the president absolutely does read and study. But with her refusing to deny that it could have been that this information, the preliminary information, could have been in one of those reports and the president didn't read it, I think that's a possibility. I think we have to count that as a possibility. And again, I want the president to win. I want him to do the things that are necessary for him to beat Joe Biden in November. And this isn't one of them, in my mind, to refer to this as a hoax when it may not be verified intelligence at this point, but something happened. It's not a hoax. And when your own press secretary can't come out and either confirm or deny that you saw some of this information in a preliminary intelligence report that was presented to you, that's not a good look for the president. That's all I'm saying. All right. Let's talk about this story. Did I just close it? I think I did. Well, at least I know where it is. I can go pull it back up again. But I thought it was a very good story about how America has done more than just about any other country in terms of getting rid of slavery. In fact, if it hadn't been for the United States, it's likely that we wouldn't have gotten rid of slavery in the world. So this idea that we perpetuate slavery is a complete myth. The title of the piece from Daily Signal is America's Founding was the Greatest Anti-Slavery Movement in History. So I want to read some of this and then comment on it. Slavery is old. Slavery is older than American history, stretching back thousands of years to prehistoric times before written historical records were kept. Slavery's taken different forms among different people in different places around the globe, existing at one time or another, often for long periods of time on every continent. Sometimes slavery has resulted from war, sometimes from religious persecution, sometimes from debt. Skin color has been important in some kinds of slavery, not so much in others. When the sciences of shipbuilding and sailing became advanced enough for the reliable transportation of cargo, transoceanic trade in slaves became big business. It was the first time large numbers of slaves were sold and sent to distant lands where they lived among people strikingly different from themselves. Much ugliness and injustice dwells in the stories of the slave trade. It is heart-wrenching to learn human beings were being treated as mere property, owned, controlled, used, bought and sold by others. But injustice, we should remember, is colorblind. Amid the growth of the international slave trades, and in the context of a much older story of slavery itself, one group of people, far from being morally perfect, dared to declare a universal, true moral idea that all men are created equal in terms of inalienable natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And these imperfect people set for themselves an ambitious goal for which there was no historical model, to create a new nation upon this idea that everybody was created equal. The idea was enshrined in America's Declaration of Independence and memorialized in Abraham Lincoln's famous speech at the Gettysburg Cemetery. The American idea is perfect. Every human being, regardless of looks, language, or religious beliefs, whether rich or poor or in between, does possess by nature a morally rightful claim to his or her own freedom, to whatever he or she rightfully owns, equal to all other human beings. And it is that mindset, according to Thomas Kranewitter, and he's exactly right about this, it is that mindset put in place by our founders who are being vilified right now. I mean, Washington, Jefferson, Adams, both John Adams and Samuel Adams, you know, Benjamin Franklin, all of our founding fathers are being vilified as nasty slaveholders when actually they came up with the principles enshrined in the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution that eventually led to the end of slavery as a trade. And it eventually led to the ascension of all minorities in America to receive particular protected rights and status. And so we need to remember this. When we hear all these stories about America being a horrible place and America being responsible for the misery of all these people, the people that were enslaved, yes, America's imperfect. There was a time when we were in a debate with ourselves about the nature of slavery. But here's something to keep in mind. There were always people in America who believed that slavery would turn out to be one of the great misdeeds in human history. And they continually moved toward the abolition of slavery, and eventually they were successful. Ken is on the phone. Hello, Ken.
And it's close. Thank you for taking the call. Less than 60 seconds, I do believe, a couple of items. Here in Western North Carolina, in a couple of these mountain towns, they've had marches now. Not many people, and of course with the virus and everything, they're having to be careful. But I would like to see a wave across this land to start organizing, go to your town leaders, say let's declare it a local blue day. We support the blue. Carry the signs if it takes 3 wide, 6 feet of distancing. March slowly. If it takes an hour and a half to get through the center of town and show the rest of this country where we support the police. Item number 2, if the clenched fist and the kneeling starts during our sporting events, if they do start back up, football, basketball, college basketball, and I believe they will, it'll be day one, then I believe that we need to organize a economic boycott and see how far we can bring LeBron James's pay down to size. And the rest of those radicals who think they're going to take our national pastimes and turn them into political points. Last but not least, the Japanese news station that I get out of Charlotte on Antenna TV, NHK, I think it is. Great, Japanese Society with English Translation. I saw a program just about a week and a half ago on the tribute on the island of Okinawa where those awful, awful Japanese fought to dominate the world with their religion. But on that island, there were still people and descendants, daughters, sons, who had a place to go on that mountain and look at their parents' photo, the soldiers' photo. And they didn't glamorize their cause. They remembered their warriors for the lost cause they were fighting too. And it's time that we stop this attack on the white race. Thanks for taking the call, Tony.
Thanks, Ken. No disagreement on any of those points. We do need to back the blue, even though there's a story, a very disturbing story, out of Tennessee where the woke mob decided to terrorize a Tennessee smokehouse over false rumors. A Tennessee restaurant was forced to cancel a nearly $1,000 order after woke mobsters launched a harassment campaign based on unsubstantiated rumors perpetuated by local media that it planned to donate the food to a Black the Blue rally. Now, they weren't donating the food. The food was bought and paid for, but that didn't matter because they were supporting by providing food that they profited off of to a rally that supported the police. And so they harassed, threatened. It was awful. And finally, the restaurant, the barbecue place, they had to back off because they just couldn't handle it. They were going to be forced out of business. Now, this is the kind of America that these people want, not the kind that we're going to celebrate tomorrow. The kind that we're going to celebrate tomorrow is an America that recognizes rights for everybody, including people who think the police do a pretty doggone good job. So back in the blue would be a great idea. Standing up for police and protecting their rights. And I agree. Look, when sports comes back, I mean, we've heard the Black National Anthem is going to be played at the first football game, NFL football games, prior to the national anthem. They're going to play the black national anthem in the why? May I ask a question? Why? I mean, a United States of America is supposed to have a national anthem that represents everybody, not just a few people, not one race. So why do we have to do that? Why is the national anthem not enough? And here's my question. Are these football players going to kneel during the black national anthem? I mean, if it's a national anthem, it's something that's raising up America. So I'm just curious if that's going to be the case. You know, here's my final statement for you for the weekend, and we're going to end the show today with Sandy Patty from 1986 at the Republican Convention. This is still one of the most beautiful renditions of the Star Spangled Banner that I think I've ever heard. And you can go ahead and start it because the music's going to play for a little bit. But one of the things that I wanted to make clear here, one of the reasons we know that injustices are wrong, one of the reasons we know that slavery is wrong, is because we know that the American ideal that we're going to celebrate tomorrow is right. And we should embrace it, thank God for it, and be happy and proud to be Americans.
Game proof through the night.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Talk, His Radio Network, or the Radio Training Network.